And now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpits, here's Nick Perez.
That's right, and welcome to Live from the Pulpit, the cutting edge in biblical exposition, coming to you on location in Merced, California, from the Merced Church of Christ. This is the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, where I, your humble correspondent, the voice of the valley, Nick Perez, offer up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Greetings, welcome to the program. Glad you tuned in. Sponsor this half hour, Sunset International Bible Institute. Located in beautiful Lubbock, Texas, SIBI seeks to train whole persons to communicate the whole gospel of the whole world wholly to please God. With a gifted staff of teachers who value the Word of God, who value the Church of Christ, and who value the lost of the world, SIBI offers and provides the best biblical training anywhere. Go online and visit SIBI.cc or call 1-800-658-9553 for more information. Sunset International Bible Institute, training men and women for over 50 years. I've been thinking about the Golden Rule lately. Probably going to preach on it here in the near future. But just some preliminary thoughts that I've come across, that I've been thinking about. And by the way, so that we're all on the same page, the Golden Rule is found in Matthew chapter 7 and Luke chapter 6, in both the Sermon on the Mount and the Sermon on the Plain, respectively. In Matthew 7, it's verse 12. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Luke chapter 6, verse 31, and as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. Each of these is found in differing contexts. From what I can gather, in Matthew 7, most sync this up with what Jesus has said in the first six verses about judging, with his teaching about prayer sort of being a parenthetical statement, but is related to judging and not judging and that sort of stuff. I know people like to quote Matthew 7, verse 1, judge not lest you be judged, don't judge, don't judge, don't judge. What's being talked about there is the writing off of somebody, writing them off, totally condemning them, and really with no view toward their soul, no desire to really help them out of any stuff. It's very condemning, okay? And so that's usually how folks connect that. Most commentaries, I've got D. Martin Lloyd-Jones's work here. He makes that connection. Now, when you get to Luke chapter 6, the context is a little different. Although he does talk about judging in verses 37 and following, this statement, this reiteration, slightly different words, of the Golden Rule is couched right in the context of loving your enemies and giving to those who beg from you, loving those even who do not love you, because even sinners do that. Jesus here says, as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. Now, from what I can gather, this, again, most scholars seem to see here, this is a commentary, or maybe even better stated, it's the practical working out of the second greatest commandment, which is to love your neighbor as you love yourself. Leviticus 18, by the way, Leviticus 19, verse 18, you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Also 33 and 34, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And so, the Golden Rule is the practical working out of that very plain command, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Well, how? How does that show up? Well, how do you wish to be treated? Do you wish to be treated as a suspect? Do you wish for people to look upon you with suspicion? Do you want people to treat you well or treat you bad? In fact, I mentioned D. Martin Lloyd Jones' work here. He's got several questions, preliminary questions here, that have to do with the Golden Rule. And it's being related to love your neighbor as you love yourself. Quote, Jesus is really saying that if you are in trouble at all as to how you should deal with others and behave with respect to them, this is how you should act. You do not start with the other person. You start by asking yourself, what is it I like? What are the things that please me? What are the things that help and encourage me? Then you ask yourself, what are the things I dislike? What are the things that upset me and bring out the worst in me? What are the things that are hateful and discouraging? You make a list of both these things, your likes and dislikes, and you work them out in detail, not only in deeds, but also in thoughts and in speech. With respect to the whole of your life and activities, what do I like people to think of me? What is it that tends to hurt me? So Jesus goes right down into the weeds, right down into the details of stuff, right to the heart of the matter. What do you like? What do you dislike? And really, maybe not so much the dislike, because here's the thing. The Golden Rule had been stated outside of the New Testament by other guys, some of whom predate the Bible, or at least predate Jesus, I should say. But they gave, we'll call it the Bronze Rule, all right? Because while it was good, it wasn't great like what Jesus gives here. Let me share with you what I'm talking about here. Hillel, he was a great Jewish rabbi. And in fact, you may run across his theological school and train of thought when you study passages like Matthew 19. There was a school of Hillel and the school of Shammai. But anyway, Hillel was a great Jewish rabbi, and he was asked to teach the whole law while standing on one foot. And so he balanced on one foot, and he said, "What is hateful to thee, do not to another. This is the whole law, and all else is explanation." Put his foot back down and then kept right on going. "What is hateful to thee, do not to another." Philo, who's another great Jewish historian out of Alexandria, he put it this way, "What you hate to suffer, do not do to anyone else." Isocrates, he was a Greek orator, he put it this way, "What things make you angry, when you suffer them at the hands of others, do not do to other people." The Stoics, they were a philosophical school, they had it in this wise, "What you do not wish to be done to yourself, do not you do to any other." Even Confucius says, he even got in on the action. He was asked, "Is there one word which may serve as a rule of practice for all one's life?" And he answered, "Is not reciprocity such a word? What you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others." Even in the Old Testament, in the wisdom of Solomon, Proverbs 24 and verse 29, "Do not say, I will do to him as he has done to me. I will pay the man back for what he has done." You don't do that. So you already had a bunch of guys saying essentially the same thing. If you don't want something done to you, don't do it to other people. But I call it the Bronze Rule because every one of them states this negatively. Jesus is the first person to show up and speak it positively. As you want others to do to you, do also to them. So, whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. This is the law and the prophets. I mean, it's sweeping in its breadth, isn't it? Whatever. Or the old King James, I believe, had, in all things whatsoever, right? That's the breadth of this. It captures everything that we do. And it's not merely for our brothers, and this is related to the question of the day, by the way, which we'll get to in a moment. It's not just for your brothers, it's not just for your friends, it's not just for the church, it's not just for your family, for your neighbors, not just for those who love you. I mean, even the pagans, even the sinners do that, Jesus says. That's the context for the golden rule over in Luke chapter 6. No, this applies to, it's for all men generally, how you would treat everybody, how you desire for them to treat you, not just your family. You expect your family to treat you well, or your neighbors, you expect them to be neighborly, or the church, you expect them to act like church folk. You want everybody to treat you right, to treat you well, to treat you nice, to think well, to not look upon you with suspicion. And so this applies to all men generally. Everybody that you come in contact with, even those people who are disagreeable to you, even those people you don't know, in the law, even the strangers and the sojourners among you, folks you don't know well, folks you don't know at all, those who are irreligious, those who are unenlightened, those whose skin color is different than yours, race, sex, color, creed, etc. In all things, whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. That's the breadth of this thing. And this is a rule of action as well. He takes it right out of the realm of theory. Love your neighbor. And brings it right down to an actionable plan. Goes beyond just sentimental love and goes right to love that has action that accompanies it. You see, it's useless to feel a certain way, to feel love for somebody, but then to not act in a loving way, and to do nothing about that. Jesus, he combines this with action. Do it, right? Do also to them. Do so to them. You want them to act a certain way to you, then you act. Do it, and do it now. And there's clarity here. Clarity, it's lucid. We know how we like people to treat us on any given occasion, any given situation. So it's crystal clear. This isn't some vagary here. It's very clear. You know how you want to be treated. ABC, action, breadth, clarity. There you go. You're welcome. For you preachers out there listening, there's your sermon outline. Action, breadth, and clarity, okay? But that's the nature of this, of the golden rule. Now, as we dig deeper, okay, how would this apply very practically? I mean, right now, today, and it's scalable. You understand this. It's scalable, okay? What I mean is, whether we're talking about masses of people and how we should treat them, or we're talking about an individual and how we should treat him or her, okay? So, for example, you've got a bunch of folks who are seeking asylum. They've had to leave their home country because of war and violence and all kinds of stuff. And they have come and they are refugees. How should we treat them, and what should we do for them? Well, if you were a refugee, if you were in their shoes, right, how would you want people to treat you? Would you want them to look upon you with suspicion? You might be a terrorist. And look, there are terrorists among them. We know that. Some who have sought to do and have done terrorism have claimed asylum as refugees. They filed the paperwork. But suspicion of their motives, suspicion of them, period. Is that how we want people to treat us, is with suspicion? And again, this is hard because of the safety ad. We want safe. We want to be safe. We want to feel safe. But again, I've dealt with this in some length in another episode about the refugees and the Christian response to refugees. But you get the idea, right? Another example would be a brother or a sister. And here's a scale, right? Because we just dealt with a group of people. Let's get right down to the interpersonal aspect of this. You've got a brother, a sister, and they just, for whatever reason, they just flat don't like you. How would you want to be treated? And especially with the Luke 6 passage about loving your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. As you wish others would do to you, do also to them. It's in the context of those who, well, they don't like you. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? Jesus goes on to say right after he gives that command, that rule. So, yeah, how... Here's another one. Here's a good one. And it's very relevant, given that the president just gave the State of the Union address. And I don't know about you, but I see all kinds of stuff on social media, Facebook, Twitter, all that. I hear stuff that people say about the president, okay? Who, by the way, is in office because that's exactly who God wants in office. Is that the kind of stuff that we would want people posting about us on social media? Is that the kind of stuff that we would want people saying about us? Okay, put the politics aside, and we, you know, his politics can be debated and all that stuff. But just from a Christian standpoint, where we know he's in office because that's who God wants there, and we know, well, the golden rule says, as I want people to treat me, I should treat them. So, should we be saying this kind of stuff? Should we be posting this kind of stuff? We got to be so careful with this Facebook business, the social media business, because it's so easy to get caught up in this stuff and to share and to repost and do all this stuff without even thinking about it. Is this something that I want done to me? And I keep coming back to this habitual suspicion business because John Piper, here's an article in the Christian Post, you can look it up, 4 ways to get rid of habitual suspicion. And I know there are Christians who just, they tend to be uber suspicious about other people, about their motives, their intentions. They're constantly looking for hidden agendas behind everything, even praise and stuff like that. And so John Piper, he addressed this stuff, and he calls it habitual suspicion. He explains, this kind of doubting or suspicion as a habit is unloving and therefore wrong. And he gives 4 recommendations for how to get rid of it. May I suggest that one way in which we might get rid of it, Piper doesn't have it on here, is the golden rule. Do you want people to think of you suspiciously? Would you want people taking the stuff that you say and twisting it? So even if you compliment them, they're like, why is he complimenting me? Why is he saying this stuff? Oh, what's he after? We wouldn't want that kind of suspicion. People looking upon us and questioning our motives, questioning our... over in 1 Corinthians 13, in the article they quote verse, Piper quotes verse 7. But verse 2, verse 5, it thinks no evil, love thinks no evil. That's that attitude, that mentality, which is it thinks evil about other people. Love doesn't do that. Why? Well, we want people. Do I want people thinking evil of me? Well, then why would I think evil of others? Paul, he gives some explanation of the second greatest commandment: love your neighbor as you love yourself, and it's related to do unto others as you want them to do to you, right? Verse 10 of Romans 13, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. You don't wrong your neighbor. You don't want people wronging you, right? Over in Galatians chapter 5, verses 13, 14, 15, especially verses 14 and 15, the whole law is fulfilled in one word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. Is that what you want? Is that you want people biting your head off and doing all this stuff? Of course not. So why are you doing it to others? Why are you gossiping about them behind their back? Why are you devouring them with your words and the stuff that you're saying? Again, this golden rule climbs right up into your lap and eats your lunch. And Jesus says volumes in a single phrase. It's the kind of stuff that philosophers, it took them, 1,800 years to catch up with Immanuel Kant and his categorical imperative? Act in such a way that your actions, if they were universalized, you want everybody to act this way? What's he saying? It's golden rule. He got it from Jesus. So, yeah, do unto others as you wish they do to you. I mean, he says so much in just a brief phrase. Today in church history, Anabaptist preacher Leonhard Scheimer is beheaded, and he's buried in Austria way back in 1528. I talked... was it earlier this week or last week about, I think it was last week, about the Anabaptists, and shared a little bit about their movement and what they were about. That Anabaptist means rebaptized. They were rebaptized. They didn't believe in infant baptism, and so they believed in believer's baptism. You had to have faith. And so there was a big persecution that kicked up all over Europe. And people were beheaded, they were killed, they were martyred because of their belief. At one point it was even outlawed, rebaptism, baptizing adults, that was outlawed. And you had to, the law was you bring your children to be baptized by the eighth day, otherwise there's a penalty. Well, Scheimer, he's interesting because he didn't want to die, right? He was dreading death. But there was a single thought which strengthened him. He says, and I quote, "If I do not place all my confidence in the Lord, I would fall. But the Lord is my comfort and my confidence. He forsakes none who trusts him." And it was that thought which took him to his martyr's death. He'd converted about 70 people in Rattenburg during his ministry. He wrote letters while he was in prison. That other Anabaptists, they got him, and they were like, "Oh man, this is good stuff, man." They held it in high regard, you know. But it was on this day, 488 years ago, that Leonhard Scheimer was martyred over in Austria.
And now it's time for the question of the day. Question of the day. Question. The This is the question of the day on Live from the Pulpit.
Where does it say the church should help the general public? Where does it say the church should help the general public? Because we should only give help to Christians, right? It should only be given to Christians. Where does it say the church should help the general public? Well, I've just spent the last 20-some-odd minutes breaking down the golden rule. Bingo! Yahtzee! There it is, right? Do unto others as you want. Do unto others. Well, the Christians, right? Well, yeah, but not just other Christians. Do unto other people. All people. All men. That's the breadth of this thing. We talked about that, right? ABC, action, breadth, and clarity. Jesus told us this is for everybody. You want people to treat you a certain way? Treat all other people the same way. If you were in need of help, whether it was food or clothing or drink, or wouldn't you, you'd want help from other people, wouldn't you? Especially from Christian folk, right? I mean, if you weren't a Christian and you knew there was a church. See, I get this all the time with people. They call down and they want to know if our church helps people. Well, yeah, we help people, okay? Because that's what we're... I thought the church, people sometimes say, I thought the church was supposed to help people. Yeah, we do. We do as much as we can. We're not set up for long-term kind of stuff. But we help as best we can. We seek to meet needs. But that's the thing is people, they should automatically recognize that if there's a church, if there's Christian folks, they help people. Why? Golden rule. Okay? Was in Galatians here for a few minutes ago. It's here too. Verse 10 of chapter 6 in Galatians. Galatians 6:10. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone. Especially to those who are of the household of faith. Yeah, we take care of our own. Especially we take care of our own. No one's going hungry because I have food in my pantry. No one's going without because I have more than enough. Especially among the family. But yeah, we do good to everybody. Okay, we do good to everybody. Here's the question. Why would Paul have to command that? The implication is Paul would have to say this because there were apparently some who either were asking a question like this individual who submitted this question, or they were getting tired of it. They were getting worn out by, man, there's just so much need. And Paul says, look, don't grow weary. Don't grow weary. As you have opportunity to keep helping folks. Especially Christians. Yes, especially Christians. Everybody? Everyone. Everyone. In all things whatsoever. Like benevolence? Yeah. Yeah. In all things whatsoever. Whatever it is you do, whatever, however you wish to be treated a certain way, do so to others. It's action. And certainly we need more of that kind of action in the church. I'm out of time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. I would like to hear what you have to say. Search Facebook, Life from the Pulpit. Like the Facebook page. You'll get all the updates when I go live with a podcast. Update the blog or post a new video on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, search YouTube, Life from the Pulpit. And the question of the day segments are there on the YouTube channel. Follow me on Twitter at InPulpit, at the letter N as in Nick, Pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Now on iTunes, search the iTunes store, Live from the Pulpit. Download all the episodes to your particular device. You'll never be more than a click away from an episode of the podcast. Be sure and stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, L-I-F-E, from thepulpit.wordpress.com. All of my commentary there on Luke, James, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, John, Philippians, now Ephesians, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Brand new stuff up there, by the way. Also on the brand new website, notsecretsecret.wordpress.com. All of my bulletin articles are there. Brand new stuff up even today. Check out Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org, mercedchurchofchrist.org. Plenty of sermon audio to help you there in your daily walk with the Lord as well. And as always, brethren, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.